Sports Radio 1290 presents the summer edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game.
Just a quick shot. Score! Just like that!
Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Ezzy, why do you need that pen over every other pen? It's my pen.
Whatever, I can steal your pen. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening.
Pen, Drew.
Good evening, Manitoba.
Start it again, Drew.
Start it again.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at www.sportsradio1290.com, good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big Thursday night activity here for you. A little bit of hockey talk for the next 2 hours.
Richie's got a new haircut.
It's quite dashing there, Richard, I must say.
You said I look younger.
When you strolled in here, you're looking very hipster tonight. And that's for you. I mean, you got the retro faded San Francisco 49ers t-shirt on.
It's classic, Richie.
Skinny jeans.
I don't know my shoes.
I saw your shoes. I don't even know how to describe the shoes.
Drew, they don't compare to your basketball shorts. I'll tell you that much right
shoes,
now.
Ezzy?
Those are nice shoes.
Are those the same shoes that you were modeling at Pizzeria Gusto? Plug.
No, those are different.
Those are different shoes. Anyways.
Those are green.
But they're similar in fabric, I thought.
No? One's leather.
One's leather. Okay, anyways.
One's leather.
Good evening, Winnipeg. My name is Drew Mindell. I'm the host of the show, joined in studio. Ezra Ginsberg suited up, nicely looking there, sharp as always. The hipster man himself, Richard Pollock.
Hi, Drew.
Hi, guys. And Michael Remus is in the other room. He's operating the R-Desk. You can go to www.illegalcurve.com. Join Michael Remus in the R-Desk and chat some hockey for the next couple hours. Got a big show ahead for you tonight. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time from the Globe and Mail, Bruce Daubigan is going to join us. Bruce covers really the world of sports media, so we're going to talk to Bruce. You know,
Remus ran into him at the draft in St. Paul.
Literally, you ran into him.
Yeah. Had a chat with him. We've had him on before. Great guest. Looking forward to talking about all things media, Drew.
Exactly. All things media with Bruce Daubigan in about 30 minutes. Coming up at 8:30 tonight, Jeff Kerbison from the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us. Jeff has been sort of covering the Jets from the, not so much an on-ice angle, but sort of all the peripheral things that go with a new team coming to town. So we'll be talking to Jeff about some of his experiences in writing some good stories on that. You can find Jeff's work, of course, at winnipegfreepress.com. And, of course, daily in the Free Press.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyways, it's been about 10 days since we've been on air, which is really a long time for us. We were on last Monday, and now we're on for the next 4 Thursdays. So,
feels like a while. People finally can know where to find us Thursdays now. Usually it's 6 on Thursdays.
That's right. Normally it'll be 6 o'clock on Thursdays, so you can just program that in. That's required listening, as it were. But it's been a while, and, somehow this team unveiled a logo, and we weren't even on air to discuss it yet.
It didn't seem like it was an intended date to unveil the logo.
No, it definitely was not. Definitely was leaked, which is...
I think in the marketing world, unveiling a logo at 4:30 on a Friday is a faux pas.
It didn't affect them.
No, it didn't affect them, but I'm just saying.
It certainly was not planned for 4:30 on Friday.
Were you the guy who tore the box open, took the picture, and sent it all over the internet?
It was not me. I can confirm it was not me. I was nowhere near any box of merchandise prior to my purchasing of the merchandise through legal and non-nefarious means, of course, I'd like to point out there. Let's talk about it. We'll spend the first segment talking about the logo. What did you think? Ezzy, you brought a picture of it?
Yeah, well,
in case you haven't seen it before.
Yeah, well, nice. I actually already got a hat. Our good friend H-Bomb picked me up a white hat. Also picked up
Before we talk about the logo, why are you printing a picture of the logo in color off of your printer? That's fairly costly expense.
I'll tell you what, your day job might not be that happy about that. That's got to be a lot of blue ink you just used.
That's a home print.
You're throwing me under a very big bus right now. If anybody from work is listening, they'll be wondering where all the color ink has gone.
What do you think of the logo?
I printed out the logo so I could compare the different marks, because there's 4 marks. And just on the topic of the primary mark, I like the jersey the logo, and I think it's even going to be better when we see it on a jersey.
Yeah. One thing before you get started is it's very hard to analyze a logo without a jersey.
Yeah. You're right.
I don't think of a logo. I think of a team's jersey.
Expect to see the logo unveiled on a couple of home and away jerseys. Uh-huh. This was obviously, Mark Chipman spoke about it on Friday. They didn't want to release the logo. It was leaked, and then they were forced to. And they already had all of the materials, all of the brand identity from Reebok ready to go.
Yeah.
But the plan wasn't to release it. And I think the jerseys were going to come in September anyways, Drew.
They still are. But they just actually, it was interesting. Scott Brown was on Hustler and Lawless earlier today, and he said that they will, the jerseys will probably not be ready for that rookie orientation tournament that's happening out in, where is it, Penticton?
In Penticton. Yes. That's, yeah. That's kind of odd.
Yeah, so they're apparently just going to...
I'm wondering what's taking so long.
I have no idea what goes into creating a jersey or a logo or anything like that. But that was, I thought, interesting, because I thought initially they said that those guys would definitely have a jersey.
Yeah, that's perplexing, to be honest.
Long as they don't wear those black logo jerseys.
Yeah.
I know, I realize it's, I think it's done overseas and whatever, they make the jerseys, but that seems like a month and a couple of weeks to get a jersey out.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Yeah. Anyways, that's an aside.
Professional one. Yeah. But, you know, just getting back to the logo, Drew, I think everyone had expectations. You could take a room full of people. Everyone had a different idea of what the logo was going to look like. And, you know, they decided to go with, the Royal Canadian Air Force inspired jet on a red maple leaf with kind of a new silver dominant mm-hmm. color. And, you know, I like it because it's new, but it's also a little bit retro as well. I think there's nostalgia involved, and it's not just the military. I think there's nostalgia involved with the old jersey.
Right.
If you remember the old jersey, the first owner of the Jets was Benny Hatskin, and yeah. Everyone's, kind of debated why he called the team the Jets. It was because he was a New York Jets fan.
Right.
And it wasn't because of the song Benny and the Jets. He just, obviously, that went hand in hand.
That's why that mascot was named Benny, though.
But the jersey, right. they decided to go heavy on the brand identity, working with Reebok and the Canadian Defense Forces. And you know what? The logo itself, I think, I think a lot of people will agree with me. Once you see this on a nice, brand new Reebok logo, home and away
jersey,
people aren't going to be criticizing it that much. You know, it came out recently. We'll probably talk about this maybe, the segment or later. But the logo itself actually isn't the exact same Royal Canadian Air Force logo. Scott Brown came out and said that, no, that's not a CF-18 jet. It's actually just art. It's an artistic rendering.
Are we actually talking about that? Is that actually an issue?
It's an issue for that.
It's the only thing I could see people having a problem with the jersey.
Are you talking about the article today? Go complain about something else outside.
The people who say it was glorifying war and the glory. I don't want to talk about it, but I can't help myself right now.
It's nonsense.
It's utter nonsense. Please go away. Crawl back in whatever hole you came out of and just hide. Nobody wants to hear from you. You are so full of nonsense. And you know what the problem is? Sometimes they might have a good point, but they can't ever be taken seriously because they come out about that. It's like when President Obama killed a fly and PETA criticized him for killing a fly. Seriously, that happened.
Well, you know what that's called, Richie?
That happened.
Richie, that's called negative Nelly.
He was doing an interview, stuff like that. And a fly landed on him, and he managed to swat it and kill it. And PETA's like, no, you should have caught the fly and released it out into the world of freedom.
What if it was carrying a virus?
Come on.
What do the PETA people have to say about that?
Look, the logo, I think, on the website, on illegalcurve.com, we put up there was a post, I think probably the post about the logo,
yep.
had the seven Canadian team logos lined up.
Yep.
It looked good. Looked at it, and the Jets logo was iconic looking.
Yep.
Already.
Good word. It is going to be iconic.
What they try and do, if you look at the seven logos of all the logos, as you just mentioned, it looked like the oldest of the bunch. And I think was part of the intention. I didn't love it when I saw it first. It's grown on me, and I like it. I think it's a 6.5 out of 10. It hasn't blown me away, but it's an above-average logo.
What logo? I mean, how many logos ever go better than that, really?
And I agree. I mean, there aren't that many.
But you make a good point. If they put this logo on a teal blue jersey or a sky blue jersey, they might be opening themselves up to some criticism.
They
got to keep it traditional. You have to keep it with a white for the home or whatever. You know, you can't start pulling out any wacky colors. And then when you need a third jersey,
they're going back to
go back to the old.
Chipman said they're probably going to go back to the old one.
That's fine. Yeah. And then everybody's happy.
And then if people really pick up on that, they might wear it more. I don't. Out of all the logo stuff here, and as you did bring it, good thing, Ezzy.
No. Now that we've done criticizing you, we're going to use your papers.
I actually like the wings the best.
Yeah,
the secondary logo I like the best. The first one I think is all right, not amazing, but not bad. And then I think both Jets marks look kind of amateurish.
You didn't like the word marks?
I don't like the word marks on either of them. They should not use those.
And Richie, what a lot of people are saying too, making a good point.
Looks like I put that together on paint.
A lot of Jets aren't an expansion team, but people are making a lot of good points about the fact that this is the first first rendering of the logo or whatever you want to call it. This is the first logo. It might change a little bit. Maybe they'll add some text within the logo.
No, apparently not. And I heard Chipman say
maybe
that.
Maybe they won't, but I mean,
he wants it to be traditional, so I don't think it's going to change.
I don't. You know who wants a car? You look at the Ottawa Senators logo. Yeah. It looks like it's a cartoon. Who wants that? You can't respect that. I don't respect that. You look at that, and it's awful.
Very respect wood.
I do respect wood, though.
It's a simplistic, classic, like you said, I would say iconic. The old logo was iconic for different reasons, and I think this jersey is going to be iconic because it's a little bit, the logo is a little bit more commanding. The jet is a little bit more in your face this time, I would say.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have no problems with it.
Are you at all surprised at the overwhelming demand for merchandise? Especially considering it's the first sort of, the merchandise wasn't, I mean, it was... It wasn't anything to write home about.
I mean, the merchandise was literally hats with a logo popped on them. Like, I mean, it costs the team probably less than $1 to put those together.
Yeah.
And they're selling it for, I don't know, how much they go for?
$28.99 was the ones that you could buy them if you bought them on the weekend. The hats were $28.99.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, you're making a huge markup on it.
The next shipment are going to be more expensive, though, is what I heard.
Well, I hope they're nicer. I mean, those look pretty plain Jane.
They were pretty plain Jane. I would agree with that. I would imagine. But I mean, the lineups to wait 4 hours to get a logo, and
it's great. I mean, it's a hockey city, and we're hungry for it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a madhouse, is what it was. I'm not terribly surprised, but it was entertaining nonetheless. That the people that waited in line for
you were
four
there.
Hours.
I wasn't there.
Yeah, I mean, I
was out of town. That's why.
Yeah. I fortunately didn't have to wait for that long, but. It was nuts. And it's not like people were pacing themselves to get there. They were finding parking spots and sprinting there like mad people, all for a hat or a T-shirt. And
that's what you need. You need that kind of passion. And I bet a lot of people who were buying the hats and the T-shirts were people who didn't have tickets and still have that passion.
And the jerseys are gonna go just as quick. So you know
that'll probably be faster, Drew.
Yeah.
Honestly, because that's people want to wear the jerseys to the game. And that's the thing, that's the biggest thing that's really changed to me since the lockout, or even before the lockout, really started to me with Calgary's run to the Stanley Cup when they wore those red jerseys. And you and I were there, and before that playoff run, there's jerseys here and there. Then everybody had a red jersey. Now you go to most arenas, and everybody's got a jersey. So I think the jersey sales will be, first of all, if you're buying an authentic jersey, which some will and some won't, not only authentic meaning pro, but the one that's semi-pro, or that you're buying a knockoff, which people will do.
Sure, because they can't afford. Jerseys aren't cheap; they're $100.
And so you're talking about $300, $200, $100 a piece. That's going to be a big boon for the team's pockets.
Yeah. Anyways, let's go to commercial break. Before we do so, just worth noting, we're going to keep you updated on everything that's going on at Canada and Stadium today with the Bombers. Kickoff was a few minutes ago, 0-0 so far.
In.
Yeah, so we'll keep you updated on what's going on the Bomber game, so you can just keep it here on Sports Radio 1290. When we come back, we're going to talk about Nikolai Zverev. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back. 7:15 in the evening. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus is operating the Illegal Curve chat. That's at www.illegalcurve.com. Head there. Talk hockey like some of the other guys who are in the chat room right now. Got a good chat going on. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And, of course, the website that bears our name, www.illegalcurve.com. Guys, lots of scuttlebutt in the last number of days about Nikolai Zverev. Apparently, he's made it public his desire to become a Winnipeg Jet. I wrote an article about that on the website earlier today. You can check that out if you're so inclined. I wanted to ask both of you what you thought about the possibility of Nikolai Zverev donning the Winnipeg Jets logo this coming season.
This is segment worthy. This is an interesting one.
Yeah, it is.
Because Nikolai Zverev is a very talented player. We don't have to say that. By all the metrics, the guy scores efficiently in his production. He drives the play. If you're looking at the course, he kind of putting the puck on the other team's net. He has the puck on his stick all the time, so he drives possession, so to speak. The guy you played with when you were younger who could do everything with the puck? Not necessarily score, but could go around people and hold the puck for long periods of time.
Yeah.
Some people see that as a guy who doesn't pass, etc. Alternatively, some people see that as, well, if he has the puck, at least the other team doesn't. So there's two points of view. Now, does his style of play maybe sometimes alienate teammates? Maybe, maybe not. Certainly coaches don't like it because it's not within the team concept, so to speak. But is Nikolai Zverev a very talented player who could certainly be an upgrade on a team's skill level? Plus, as you mentioned, Drew, very, 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 very good point by you today in your article on illegalcurve.com. Eric Fair might be out till December.
Yep.
He'd fit in perfectly well on the right wing in Winnipeg. It's an interesting problem that the Jets have because they have cap space as. But the question is this, and I think this is a big question. You don't question his talent. There are questions about his attitude. Based upon what the Jets have done and said since the inception of the franchise 2.0 at the end of May, beginning of June, Nikolaj Yerdev, or the player we believe and person we believe Nikolaj Yerdev to be, how he's been portrayed in the media, is the complete and total opposite of what the Jets have been building towards and what they desire.
Character-wise.
And character's number one here.
Yeah.
And if he is a character, or lacks the character for, you know, maybe in for better terms, if he lacks the character necessary to make this team, period, never mind make it better skill-wise, just make the team because they don't deem him to be of a certain level that he is capable of being on the team.
Well, Richie, I think there's a few things that you have to consider here. You're touching on character, and it's clear that, you know, the Jets and Kevin Cheveldayoff and Zinger, they've decided to definitely, you know, seek out a certain player, and, mm-hmm. and you know, they've done a very good job at surrounding some of the players they already have with guys that they, you know, were able to acquire or sign. Nikolaj Yerdev had a really bad in Philly and last year, and he was for a while. I don't know off the top of my head how many games he went without scoring a point, but he went through long droughts last year.
He was hardly playing.
He was playing with Richards, and that was a terrible fit, Mike Richards. And you have to consider, though, that if, and Drew touched on this a little bit, because of the lack of scoring on this team, Nikolaj Yerdev becomes your number one right winger easily. I mean, maybe...
Or second to Wheeler.
Maybe yeah, second, think, maybe second Wheeler to Wheeler, but he becomes...
But you can argue he can
argue,
be first.
Argue,
he's got the talent to be a top... Right. To be the first.
He could be your first right winger, line right winger. So if he's expressed an interest, him and his agent have expressed an interest in Winnipeg, you've got other Russian players that are now under contract, Burmistrov, Telgin, I hope I pronounced that name right. He's not going to play in the NHL, but you've got a few Russian players that you'd have to think a guy like Yerdev could really work with as a guy that came into the NHL really young. And Yerdev... you know, just looking at his stats, he's got 120 goals in 400 games. He's gone through droughts. He was actually, you know, successful in the Rangers, but he fell out of line in Columbus. And then, like I mentioned, you know, 30 seconds ago, Drew, he had a horrible year in Philly last year. You know, 21, 22 points in 56 games. That's bad.
Yeah, I mean, but given absolutely no opportunity to do anything.
He was definitely... In a bad role in Philly, Richie.
Laviolette didn't like him. I mean, it didn't make sense assigning from the beginning. I just think there's certain fits for the players, as in, like, I don't think that was a fit. Nikolaj Yerdev played 12 minutes last year. You're right, he had 22 points in 56 games, but he had 16 goals in 56 games.
Yeah,
that's
a
pretty
sniper.
Good.
He's a sniper.
He's got a good shot.
Yep.
He's a plus player, although I don't think plus means that much in any event. I mean, how are you utilizing him, as? I think that's a question.
Let me ask this question.
I know Ken Hitchcock didn't like him, but Ken Hitchcock doesn't like a lot of players.
Right. And
he's not the most likable guy.
Would have he had him in Columbus? He had him in Columbus?
Yeah, they didn't like each other.
Yeah, I'm not surprised about that. But I mean...
Almost positive, right?
I think so. I think they would have played 1 year together.
Is that Filatov?
I'm not sure.
He didn't get along with either of them.
Yeah, they should probably... I think Columbus should stop drafting Russian players. They seem to have trouble with them. Let me ask you guys this. Why do you think Yerdev is so eager to come to Winnipeg, allegedly?
Well, that's the thing, first of all, Drew, because he doesn't have anywhere else to go. I mean, this isn't like he has, you know, it's not like Yerdev sitting there going, I have 10 options and I'm going to pick Winnipeg. He has no options. Nobody's offered him any kind of deal that he thinks is a reasonable contract. And he's sitting around waiting and talking to the KHL. Back to the time on ice, guys. He paid a minute on the power play per game. That's not much.
No.
It's certainly not first line. It's not even second line minutes on the power play, really. So how often is he on the ice? When he's on the power play, has he not been playing all game? Efficiency-wise, he was pretty good. He was pretty productive last year.
Do you think with an opportunity, with regular ice time playing with your better players, do you think he could perform, is he going to be able to perform? Is he going to be able to get you 50, 60 points?
Yeah, I think so,
yes,
for sure.
Yes, definitely.
But then what's the question?
Well, do you want another high pick next year? You're not going to make the playoffs right now as the team is currently constructed. Do you want another high pick, or do you want to try and make the playoffs? And the question is this. What's your vision? Are you going to try and make the playoffs? And if you're close to the playoffs, you're going to try and add players or stick with the team you have? Or are you going to sign Yerdev? I guess there's three options. You sign Yerdev, you try and make a run in the playoffs. Two, you sign Yerdev, and you try and deal him mid-season when he's really playing well.
Right.
Three, you don't sign him at all, and you keep the core intact, the character issue intact. You don't have any questions about that, and you have another rebuilding year, and you have another top pick. There's three options to me. Asset-wise, number two is the best option.
Sure. You get them, you use them, and then you get rid of them. Interesting point from Luke Miguez in the chat room at www.illegalcurve.com. Claude Noel would have been an assistant coach when Zverev was in Columbus.
And then he became interim head coach.
So I'm interested there to find out. I mean, obviously we don't know. I'd be curious to find out what Noel and Zverev's relationship was like. Maybe that was maybe they had some sort of bond or chemistry.
Richie, I have to think that it would be. There is no options. I think there's also to be added that there aren't a lot of Nikolai Zverevs out there right now to be had. It's not like there's, a lot of guys with his talent out there that could be had for $2 million or whatever.
Certainly not. I mean, and you're talking about,
Noel was there. That's absolutely right.
Yeah. I mean, that's just it. This risk, I mean, obviously they're not going to, break the bank. I mean, he's not worth more than maybe $2 million at most, but that was, he got $2 million to sign in Philly last year, and he didn't perform that well, so you'd think he'd be worth less. So
his value hasn't increased.
Let's put on our general manager's hat a bit, and if you're Cheveldayoff, two-part question, you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, A, would you sign him?
I don't think they're touching him, by the way, just to let that...
A, would you sign him? B, what would you pay him?
If I were to sign him, yes. Which I don't think they would, if they were to sign him, I think they could sign him for one year at $1.5 to $2 million.
And Richie,
that's fine.
And I think I'd have to agree with you. I think that this it's very possible that this is just a late July slow news type of rumor, and this never happens. But yeah, he's probably worth that amount of money, and I would sign him. But I mean, you know what? If I was in if I was in Chevy's shoes, I probably wouldn't, because I don't necessarily know that.
This is where
smartest move at this point.
There's a distinct advantage in terms of, like a guy like Sidney Crosby. He's great in the room. Everything about him, really. We hear the whispers about Richards and about Carter. We haven't really been privy to a lot more information about Nikolai Zverev, whether there is information or not. So there must be obviously a lot more. Luke mentions the Claude Noel connection. Yeah, that's an interesting point he has. But alternatively, maybe Zverev didn't excel in Columbus because Ken Hitchcock and his negative attitude was too much for him. There's a lot of, going over those three options, I mean, number one to me is not an option. Signing him and trying to go to the playoffs with him is absolutely not an option. Number two, this is the thing. When you talk about a problem in the locker room, what necessarily does that even mean? I like to equate it to the teams that we play on.
Sure.
We play on a team. Yeah, you guys play on teams growing up. Tim did, Remus did, we all did. You play on a team, there was 15 guys on the team, for example, okay?
Yeah.
You were buddies with 5, 6, 7 of them.
Sure.
The other 6, 7, or 8 of them, you played with, they were fine, they probably annoyed you. You might not like them, but they were your teammates, you stuck up for them, and that was it. You didn't have to associate with them off the ice.
So you're saying that you think that locker room chemistry might be overrated?
To a point, as long as, if a guy's, to himself, I don't really see him as being a detriment. If he's, going out and partying and breaking stuff and causing problems, maybe. But if Nikolai Zverev is just kind of a loner, I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. And if you have locker room structure and you have leadership and who try and make it easier for him, you could very well deal with it and then turn him into an asset later on. And you take the pressure off some of your younger players who have to play against. You can play against a little bit worse players and get their confidence. There's a lot of it that makes sense about it. But sometimes I think the locker room factor is blown out of proportion. And does he not pass? Yeah, sometimes he doesn't pass. But there are, there's a guy Berzin didn't pass. There's a lot of guys who.
I'd
don't
have to
pass.
Agree with that too, Drew. And I know we're right up against the clock, but the reason why I agree with Richie on that point is that I think that, let's say a guy, comes into the league at, 19, 20 years old, just for the sake of argument, and then there is an incident that he's, revolving around his laziness or the fact that he's not very well liked.
Yeah.
26 years old, they're still talking about that same incident.
Right.
It sticks with you. And the thing is, Nikolai Zverev was actually, like I mentioned, about 10 minutes ago, he only spent 1 year in New York, and he actually was really good in New York. The team didn't do very well.
Yeah, he was good.
But, I mean,
remember,
perfect example. He's had success, 60-point year with Columbus, but then again, he's been inconsistent and gone through these long scoring droughts.
In New York, the reason why he left New York is he won a salary arbitration in the amount of $3.9 million, and the Rangers walked away from it.
His skill set is cannot really be questioned. Is he a positive force on the ice? I think so. I think that's absolutely 100% the case. He's a top six forward. You could argue higher than that.
You're not picking him up to be a leader. You're picking him up because he could very well get 30 goals.
And the question is internal leadership. Look at the New England Patriots today. They bring in Albert Haynesworth and Chad Johnson. If you don't have a coach with a strong will and internal leadership, they can't handle that. So is the problem the player? Or is the problem that the Jets maybe do not yet know how strong their locker room is? I mean, this is a first-year franchise, for all intents and purposes. Many of the people involved haven't been in the same locker room together. If, you know, maybe a year down the road, when Kevin Cheveldayoff, Claude Noel, Craig Heisinger know their room and know the players involved, maybe they feel more confident bringing a player like this in. That could be a factor as well. I don't think they're going to bring him in because of the questionable character issues, whether they're true or not, because this team has emphasized character. But I also think there's a lot of unknowns involved. I think a year down the road, there could be a whole different ballgame.
Let's leave it there. When we come back after these commercial messages, Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. In the evening, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Michael Remus is working hard at getting Bruce Daubigan on the line. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, the website that started this all, www.illegalcurve.com. Let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program from the Globe and Mail, Bruce Daubigan. How are you?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Doing very well. Thanks for joining us.
You still have your team, right? You're still in the NHL.
Yeah.
They haven't taken it back yet. Okay, good.
They're still here. They're not going anywhere, hopefully. Not for a long time based on that season ticket drive.
I sure hope so. The NHL has done weird things in the past. I don't want them to do that to you guys again.
I would agree with you on that one. Let's start with sort of the local topic, Bruce, and it's been reported, nothing confirmed, so I just want to stress that TSN is going to make the big splash in the market and get the broadcasting rights for radio and television. You know, in terms of Rogers and Sportsnet, given that Rogers has a large market share already in Winnipeg, is it more important for Bell/TSN to get in here?
Well, I think they were able to deliver sort of two for the price of one. They were able to deliver a combination of the radio and the TV at the same time. Chorus, which runs CJOB, couldn't do that. And I don't think there was a radio station in the Rogers network in the Winnipeg market, but the Rogers station that was, you know, that could do that as well. So they were able to do two for the price of one, and I think that had some appeal at the end.
Bruce, Pierre LeBrun has made the switch over to TSN. Do you have any concern that Pierre LeBrun's going to get lost in the shuffle at TSN with the plethora of all the announcers and commentators they have there?
Well, it's still my understanding that he's still going to do some work for ESPN in the States. I don't think so. Pierre is a first-rate guy in terms of, you know, chasing stories and all that. And the war is on between Rogers and TSN in terms of who's going to get the scoops. And I think sometimes the best idea is to buy up all the good guys in the market. I think that's what TSN is doing here. Especially if they add the regional games, the Winnipeg regional games, they got regional Montreal games, there'll be lots of work for them.
Is it a little bit different, Bruce, in terms of, you know, in the States you have ESPN really a dominating force, and in Canada you now have two powerhouses. Does that make it a little more interesting for the viewer?
Well, it's certainly going to, you'd like to think it provides you with some choice. And style and the difference between the two. And right now, I mean, TSN has a style which is pretty businesslike. They're not flashy particularly. Mm-hmm. Rogers is still trying to work on what their attitude's going to be, what their profile is going to be. You've seen them sign some people. You've seen them doing some things in terms of the hires that they've made. Doing the radio out of Toronto with Mike Richards. That's a little bit different, a little more offbeat. So we'll see where it goes. But what I want to see between the two is a little bit difference in style. So as a consumer, I don't get the same thing twice. I get, you know, I have a choice of things.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail.
Bruce, we've seen in the past week or so, you've reported that both Mike Emmerich, Dave Strader are going to be leaving their play-by-play jobs with the Devils and Coyotes, respectively, to join NBC on an exclusive full-time basis. What is the reasoning behind such a move for both people, and maybe NBC's brain trust reason for maybe requesting such a move?
Well, I think what you're seeing out of NBC, what they call it now, NBC Universal, which owns Versus and owns a bunch of stuff, MSNBC, CNBC, I think you're seeing the first, I wouldn't say they're necessarily going to be a direct competitor to ESPN, but it's going to be the first sort of major network competition for ESPN in a while. And what they've been able to do is, since they did the merger, they've been able to give a little more money to the NHL, concentrate a bit more on the NHL, get their product out there. And I think they also have decided that they've got to, you know, for Versus, or what is going to be called the NBC Sports Channel in the future, I think that they have to get some top names for it. And that's part of why they went and got to Strader and Doc Emrick.
Bruce, it's we sort of with Pierre Maguire leaving TSN, there's a void for that number one color guy. We sort of expect that Ray Ferraro is going to slide in there. Two-part question. One, is that what you expect? And second of all, who do you expect to see Ray Ferraro as replace Ray Ferraro as the number two color guy?
Well, my understanding is that negotiations are going on with Ray about sort of taking on that. Ray is also doing the morning show in Vancouver. So even if he's been doing games on TSN at night, he's been getting up the next morning and doing radio for Vancouver. So he's got a lot on his plate already, and for TSN to want to step that up, they're obviously going to have to compensate him for that. So I don't know whether you will see him adopt all of the Pierre Maguire roles that Pierre had. And if you're looking for a guy who you know, would be the number two guy, would sort of slot into where Ray used to be, probably Mike Johnson, I think, is the guy you're going to see between the benches.
Bruce, we're going to continue the television broadcaster musical chairs. Jeff Merrick has moved to Rogers Sportsnet. The question is, do you think this is the first sign that a few guys are going to start to bail on CBC with the expectation that, you know, CBC might lose some of their hockey coverage?
Well, I don't think you'll see a lot of guys in the short term, certainly not the veteran guys. I wouldn't expect a guy like Scott Oak or somebody who's been around for a long time to really be doing that. But Jeff Merrick's a young guy, and, you know, I think he felt like, looking down the road, he wanted to be with the people who are going to have hockey going forward. The market seems to be saying that CBC, even if it keeps NHL hockey, it certainly won't be the primary role it has now. So Jeff made that call. You might see a couple of other young guys, but by and large, if there's one thing you can say about Hockey Night in Canada, it's a lot of old guys. It's not a bunch of young guys. So, you know, I don't see there being a huge defection.
Bruce, I'm not actually sure. The NHL Canadian rights, are they up after this upcoming season?
No, the rights start in 2014-2015, so the negotiations will probably start after the CBA is over. Okay. When we get the CBA broadcast, CBA negotiations finished, I think then you'll see them concentrate on that. Probably 2012-2013 is when it'll really kick in. The end of next year and into 2013, I think, is when they'll really start to get serious about it. But I would say the first thing that has to happen is the NHL and the Players Association have to get their CBA done.
Yeah, I guess I've seen that in the NFL once, so they get that taken care of. They can go to the TV deal. You know, on the radio side, you mentioned it earlier, the Mike Richards and the TSN Radio's emergence in the Toronto marketplace. Can you, you know, inform our listeners, Winnipeg listeners, a little bit about how that's proceeding so far, the TSN Radio versus kind of the Fan 590, and maybe talk about the branding of the stations throughout the country?
Well, there's a couple of issues there in what you just raised. I mean, they give it a lot of promotion, and frankly, the first ratings books haven't necessarily been very impressive. Now, you have to understand that Toronto wasn't in the playoffs. There was nothing. The Raptors weren't in the playoffs. The Maple Leafs weren't in the playoffs. It was a tough time to launch another sports radio station with none of the home teams doing anything. But even at that, I think their numbers were a little disappointing. One thing in their favor is the Leafs rights holders, AM 640, have now basically gotten rid of all of their hockey content during the day. So I think that's going to drive some people maybe to TSN a little bit. What was the second question? Sorry?
It's about the branding of the networks across the country.
Oh, yeah. The thing that you hope is that TSN is going to make a serious 2 to 3 year commitment to this thing to grow it and not really get discouraged by the earlier results. And one of the things that kind of raised questions with me was I didn't understand why, because they have all the Chum stations, TSN's parent company owns Chum, and they have all the stations across the country, like the team in Montreal, Ottawa, and Vancouver. I didn't understand why they didn't put that designation, the TSN designation, on them right away. Just thinking of Vancouver, you know, the visibility of having TSN radio through that whole playoff run, that would have been a huge thing for them. So it said to me that, you know, they're not perfectly content yet with the experiment. They're not sure where they're going with it, and they don't want to maybe taint a couple of other stations with their brand until they've been ready.
Very interesting. Bruce, we'll let you go on this last question. NBC has just re-upped for the next number of Olympics. The next two Winter Olympic Games, which is really what we care about with Olympic hockey participation and everything, are in the death of time zones, Sochi, Russia, and Pyeongchang, South Korea. How does the NHL, given their partnership with the with NBC, avoid going to those two cities, those two Olympic Games?
Well, I think it's something that's going to be collectively bargained in the next CBA, the NHL going to the Olympics. Right now, if I had my opinion about the next two Olympics, I don't think the owners want to go. I think if this was to be decided today, they wouldn't go to them for all sorts of logistical reasons. The time zone things for TV are tough. And then just, again, they went to Japan in 1998. They know how logistically complicated it was to shut the league down, get everybody to the other side of the world, play the tournament, get everybody back. There's going to have to be a real incentive for them to continue and do that.
Just last question, part B, Bruce. How much of a factor is Dick Ebersol moving on from NBC chairman of the sports broadcasting have an effect on the future of NBC's involvement?
Well, it's a really good question because Gary Bettman had a real relationship with Dick Ebersol. Some people would say he was almost obsessed with NBC and Dick Ebersol to the exclusion of some other opportunities for a while. But they just signed a 10-year contract with NBC, so I don't think anything particular is going to change. It might not be as smooth as it would be before. And the thing we were talking about before about the Olympics, trying to get the NHL to the Olympics and help out a broadcast partner. Dick Ebersol was there. It might be somebody a little easier for Gary Bettman to negotiate with. Right now, it's an open question.
Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail, terrific as always. Thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Okay, guys.
Take care, Bruce. Thanks very
Bruce.
Much.
Thanks, Bruce.
See ya.
Before we go to break, we promised you updates. Here it is. At the end of the first quarter at Canadian Stadium, Bombers 3, Lions 3. They've traded field goals. Slow start for the Bombers. They didn't come out with the emotional high that I expected. A little bit laid back, but they seem to be picking it up now. The defense is starting to make some noise.
We're going to break, Drew, but I mean, the team's strength is defense. So.
Yeah, yep, exactly. Alex Super just got a sack, Drew.
Exactly. So, the defense is picking it up. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Shortly after 7:45 in the evening, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock. Michael Remus is operating the R desk at www.illegalcurve.com. We just heard from Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail. We always appreciate Bruce's insight into the world of sports media. Late last night, Richie sent us all out an email, and it was an email with a topic of conversation for today's show, and I think it's quite interesting. And let me sort of give the background to the concept about it. Within this salary cap world, there's always mistakes that teams make. And the mistakes that teams make gives the opportunity for the teams with lots of salary cap room to take on a problem contract in exchange for a high draft pick, a problem contract and a high draft pick in exchange for nothing. Pretty much, as an example, the Jets have a ton of cap room. The Buffalo Sabres have no cap room.
Right.
The Jets will take on, the bad Buffalo contract as long as it doesn't hamstring them for too long, a year or 2 years, something along that. So, the Jets will take that bad contract, and because they will take that bad contract, say, for a seventh-round draft pick, Buffalo will throw in a second-round pick or a third-round pick, begging a team to take their garbage. So let's spend a segment talking about that because, using our good friends at CapGeek and their resources, a team like Buffalo right now is almost $3.5 million over the salary cap.
Right.
The Jets, mind you, on the other hand, are nowhere near the salary cap. So if you're the Winnipeg Jets and you're sitting back and you're talking to Darcy Regier and the Buffalo Sabres, is there a match there where the Jets can take on a problem contract and get a high draft pick in addition to that contract?
I mean, I think there could be. Look at a guy like Aleš Kotalík.
Yeah.
They have no use for him.
No.
I mean, I know he's succeeded under Lindyaroff before, but the guy couldn't crack the Rangers lineup, couldn't crack the Flames lineup. He provides an element of a slap shot on the point for the second power play unit and a depth winger with okay hands and not bad defensively. But he has his, he's not a great player. He's not very productive. He's certainly not worth $3 million. But what's it worth to Buffalo to trade $3 million off their cap?
Which would pretty much get them close enough that they can be under the cap.
Close enough. It'd be within a couple $100,000.
Which you can easily maneuver.
Yeah, you can manipulate the cap in certain ways. What about Aleš Kotalík to a team like Winnipeg for a third-round draft pick? Or Aleš Kotalík You know, trading Alex Kotelik in a second for a fifth. Something like that. You know, what's it worth to the Jets? Maybe, basically what I'm saying here is recommending buying picks. Use the cap. You have the space. Now you need to have owners who are willing to take the money.
That's right. You have to spend it.
But you're acquiring assets. You know, that's one of the most important things to me. If you're a team in this kind of financial situation, you're way below the cap. Like, look at where Winnipeg is right now. They only really have Zach Bogosian to sign.
Yeah. And right now they're at $48 million, so they're $15 million under the cap.
So if
and everybody expects them to probably be in the $55, $56 million range.
So you take a Kotelik maybe for a draft pick, you get up to 51, or Bogosian signs for about 2.5, say, for example, 2 to 3. So around there, you take a Kotelik and maybe one other player. Another player I had in mind was Nicholas Hagman. Recognize the Flames being the common theme in this one.
Yeah,
but Nicholas Hagman. Nicholas Hagman's on the books in Calgary next year for $3 million. You know, what's he worth? What's it worth to the Flames to get him off the books? Maybe open up some other avenues for them. And one other common theme here is that all these players are pending UFAs after the upcoming season.
Right. So you're in the same situation where the way I look at Richie, and you'd probably agree with this, and this probably applies to Zverev too, because all of these guys are only going to be here for 1 year. You have to assume that. You know, we probably don't think that Zverev will end up in Winnipeg, but if he did, he'd be signed to one, probably at most two, right?
Right.
So you're signing a guy, and the downside is that he doesn't really work out. You're paying a guy $2 million or $3 million in Hagman and Kotelik's case, and he's not productive. He slumps like they have in the past.
That's right.
But the upside would be that it fills a role, and on Winnipeg, there's injury issues with Antropov. There's major injury issues with Fair. To start the season, so why wouldn't you take the risk on a guy who's going to produce for you early in the season, and then you can go ahead and, like we talked about last segment or two segments ago, you can go around and shop him close to the trade deadline, and then get that draft pick back. So that's probably the upside there.
It's also
in addition to the production that you need.
You could turn it into two picks.
You're using your resources. I mean,
two picks.
It's costing you cash is what it's costing
the
you.
The Blues did this a couple of years ago when they signed Tkachuk and those guys to one-year deals.
Yeah.
They traded him. So they signed him. They basically bought picks, traded him to Atlanta, four picks. Then he came back in the summer.
Right.
I'm not saying you need to come back for the summer, but basically what they were doing is they were buying picks. They weren't going to make the playoffs or be that much of a contender.
They knew he'd be useful to a contender.
Look at it in baseball, for example, on Octavio Dotel in Toronto. You signed him to a one-year deal with an option. Now, there's no options in hockey, but you signed him to a one-year deal. Okay, Remus, you can get in here. You signed him, and you know he's out there for very minimal amount of money in baseball terms in the summer. And then every year, guys, you get halfway through the season. Oh, he looks appealing.
So the Jays are going nowhere fast, but they used Octavio Dotel to get Colby Rasmus.
Say, for example, you were to get Kotelik and a second for a fifth-round pick, okay?
Yeah.
Just say that. And then you have Kotelik, and say, for example, he does perform, and people need a veteran winger who's got a big shot and maybe can help you in the shootout down the stretch or on the power play, whatever it may be. They just need a body, and they'll give you a fifth. Maybe you'll get your fifth back.
Which is what Ezzy just said.
And exactly. Yeah. And that, I mean, Remus, get in here.
I was just going to say about, you know, the Dotel team. There's always those teams who need those type of players down the stretch. I mean, Dotel's been traded four times in the past, four trade-ons. But this isn't a baseball show. This is a hockey show.
But Remus, the point is good because Kotelik and Hagman are both guys that have been traded many times. Zverev has been on three teams.
The Jets have the biggest asset that the Jets have right now is their cap space. And they can be ruthless to the teams that did not manage the salary cap very well, who are stuck, you know, in salary cap trouble. And they're going to say, yeah, we'll take your problem, but it's going to cost you. It's going to cost you a second-round pick.
Now, here's one who wasn't a pending UFA. We mentioned Hagman. By the way, this kind of all got spawned by Rolston yesterday.
Sure.
Of course, he got traded today.
Yeah.
We can talk about that later, but
we will in the Islanders.
You know, we mentioned Rolston. Here, Rolston's off the table now. What about a Hagman? What about a Kotelik? What about New York, where now they're over the cap with the Callahan signing, which we can talk about later too. The Callahan signing puts them just below the cap.
$700,000.
$700,000 below the cap.
But they have one player to sign.
They need to add another defenseman.
Yeah.
So $700,000 below the cap. I mean, they could bring up another defenseman. What about a Wojciech Wolski? A guy who can produce offensively.
He's a UFA, right?
He's a pending RFA.
Pending RFA,
What happens? So he takes the team to arbitration, and then they just say, first of all, they don't qualify him, and he's free to go.
For sure. If they don't like him, the team has, right? You know, the team, exactly.
They can't impose arbitration on them.
your risk is minimal. Like we've said on this show, might as well be the tagline of the show.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a bad one-year contract.
And he's a guy who would have value moving forward. So what if you get a pick with him and you give the Rangers a little bit more salary cap room?
And what
they're not
going to
play
has,
him. They don't want to play him.
Richie, what that argument has going for it, too, is that so far the Jets haven't taken a large risk. The fair trade comes with a risk, but it's not a large risk.
They gave up two middling pros. They gave up a draft pick and a relatively minor prospect.
Yeah. So if you're going to take a risk, this is probably a good opportunity to do it late July, early August, on a guy that is not going to present major problems down the road. If the Jets don't go after an RFA or UFA, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for some of these guys that have little NHL experience, whether it's Jason Gregoire or, I mean, the team has holes on the wings, especially. The opportunity, Drew, now to do this is probably not going to be there all the time, because then you're going to have to have other guys that are going to have to step into roles. Burmistrov is going to have to, add more minutes, and then you're going to have Kane, who's going to be expected to, in his fourth year, to produce a little bit higher than he will this year. So now is probably a good time if you're going to take a flyer on a Hagman or a Kotelik or a Zhereyev. Who knows how serious they're taking that right now.
But. And you're only taking a guy like that to get a pick with him. And to maybe down the road, you're not counting on turning him into anything down the road. But if he does turn into something down the road, that's a bonus. But that's what you're looking at, is teams that need some cap flexibility. And the Rangers have no use for Wolski. They don't want him. What does Buffalo want Kotelik for? They're in huge cap problem. What does Calgary want Hagman for? They're trying to get rid of him. I mean, why not say, hey, give me this pick? I'm not saying that the other teams would do that, but it's worth venturing into that territory to wonder. Taking and buying, essentially buying picks. I understand the team doesn't want to spend money for needlessly, but to me this is not needlessly.
You're getting an asset. If you get a real good draft pick,
that's right.
Then it costs you $3 million, right. Which is, of course, not chump change, but in the world of hockey, it is chump change.
What is signing it? What about now the UFA market, where you don't get a pick with the player, but you sign a player and hopefully turn him into an asset? What about a John Madden?
Where you can deal him or something at the trade deadline.
Maybe for a fourth or fifth rounder. Maybe that's not worth the money you're paying him, but worth considering.
The cap space that they have right now gives them so much flexibility and so many options.
People trade third rounders like it's nothing at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Even second rounders will go for sometimes. For like last year, Chris Campoli got a second round pick.
Yeah.
Chris Campoli, also the player who turned over the puck to Alex Burrows in his own zone. But Chris Campoli, a defender who I've never really cared for that much, who Chicago just got rid of and didn't qualify there, or didn't want to go to arbitration with him.
Right.
A guy like that got a second-round pick, in that deal. So what's a guy like McCabe worth at the deal at the deadline next year? And I realize the Jets don't have any room in defense. They have eight guys deep.
But
eight,
if you sign some of these, you sign one of these forwards who's
forward,
useful.
They have space.
Yeah, if you sign a useful forward to a one-year contract, you pay him $2 million, and that guy turns out, and some team at the trade deadline is in desperate need of a checking forward.
John Madden. You sign John Madden, and John Madden, you sign him for $2 million, or $1.5 million. Tapa's playing in the play and down the stretch. Dominic Moore gets injured.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Now we need John Madden, and we're going to pay you a second-round draft pick for him.
You have to think of that future value. Definitely.
Yeah. All it's costing you is money. And you know what?
Creative ways.
Yeah, that's right. Be creative with your salary cap space. You're not going to have it forever, because if you have it forever, odds are that means you've been a bad team forever. Eventually, you're going to have to spend some of it.
True North is selling enough T-shirts and hats that they can afford a couple $1 million extra.
That's probably true as well. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll have one more hour to go, I guess. All right?
You seem distracted by the
I was about to say when we come back, but I got confused. I was going to give a score update.
The Bombers game, Drew. It's distracting you. We should have been there.
Change up.
No, it looks awful. Looks absolutely awful. 6-3 Bombers.
Remus, the changeup?
I'm in for the changeup.
You're in for the changeup,
It looks like unintentional comedy.
What's that movie
best.
With is Cameron Diaz, the teacher or something?
That bad teacher.
Bad
it's already
teacher.
Out.
Apparently, what about Bad Santa? That was a great movie.
That was a great movie.
Yeah.
Changeup looks so terrible. I would really want to see it.
I think Drew really wants to go see Friends with Benefits.
6-3 Bombers at the late or sort of 5 minutes into the second quarter. 6-3 Bombers. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the situation on Long Island. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.